ladies and gentlemen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Send us your ideas. We are open to any idea.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
What are your two cents on the running back market right now, Mark Ingram?
I think it's criminal that they're trying to do our position like this.
Would you tell them to hold out?
I definitely would.
Earlier on the show, three-time Pro Bowl running back Chris Johnson, actor and comedian Godfrey. Coming up, 13-year NFL veteran Ephraim Salam. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Mike Hill.
2 hours down, 1 more hour to go on the Rich Eisen Show. Mike Hill sitting in for the great Rich Eisen. Happy to be here with you guys. Brock Lindell, Tufo, TJ in the house
what
with
up,
me.
Though?
Fellas, 2 hours down, man. The weekend is almost here, baby.
Let's do
day
it.
Is flying, man.
Yeah. I'm still recovering from last weekend, man. What I've realized at my age, I'm 52. I'll be 53 next month. Shout out to all the Leos out there. It's about a BR season once again.
No doubt.
Is that I can still party. Mm-hmm. I just can't recover.
Yeah. It's a recovery. Yeah.
I can't recover.
Yeah. Recovery.
It takes me a long time to recover.
Ice bath at the crib. Bounce back.
Yeah. Bruh, I mean, like, I was out in Vegas. I hung out one time to like 4 o'clock in the morning. Summer League out there, man. And the heat and everything. Partaking some beverages, you know what I mean? Here and there. And hanging out with some folks and partying, listening to music, and then going to the pool and doing it all over again. I realize the next day I wake up, man, it's like your body feels things they never felt before. You get to be a certain age, your body just doesn't, like, bounce back the way it does. I mean, like, I understand I need to go to cryotherapy.
Oh, yeah.
I need, like, oxygen tanks. I need those type of things to recover. I need what the NFL players and the NBA players use. I just can't afford it. But, yeah, that's what I need because I can't recover. My man! Ephraim Salam is joining us right now, 13-year NFL veteran. This is my guy. And when I tell you, like, I've met a lot of people in this business that I admire, that I love, that I respect. But Ephraim is definitely at the top of that list when it comes to that, man. 13 years in the league. Obviously, we worked together over at Fox Sports. Mm-hmm. We had a radio show together on Fox Sports Radio for a while.
Hit show.
And this guy is just an incredible person, incredible human being, incredible husband and father. He does it all. He is the example. Quick story. Now, obviously, I'm divorced. I just got divorced. But Ephraim is the reason why I got married the last time. Ephraim's the reason why I met Cynthia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thought that was the one.
Yeah. Struck out again.
Ah, well, you know,
they said the third time's a charm. I said 3 strikes and you're out. Yeah, man. I thought so too, bro. That's the reason why I married. But anyway, things happen. We're still cool. We're still good friends. But Ephraim, when we was doing a radio show together, I don't know if you remember this, but you're the one that said, "Hey, man, you know, would you go on a dating show?" Remember you asked me that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You remember that?
Yep.
You said you had a producer friend.
Yep.
And she was looking for somebody to go on Steve Harvey's show.
Called me and was like, "Hey," I was like, "I think I got the perfect guy."
Mm.
And I called you and I said, "Would you be open to dating one of the Real Housewives of Atlanta?" You were like, "Which one?"
Which one?
And I was like, Cynthia Bailey. He was like, "Oh yeah. Set that up." So, you know, and look, I thought the rest was history, but look, life is full of experiences.
It is, man.
Right? You take the good, the bad, you can learn from every experience. And, you know, that's relationships.
It is. It's history. And, you know, but you've been able to carve out a great career for yourself, but also a great relationship with your wife, Renice. How long have you guys been married now?
We've been married 17 years, been together 20.
17, 20. Wow. And she used to be a dancer for Beyonce.
She was a dancer. She was one of the best dancers in the world. She danced with Beyonce, Destiny's Child, Ricky Martin, Usher, Rihanna. She toured the world, you know, for 12 years.
Wow, man. Awesome. 17 years together, man. How the kids doing?
Beautiful.
And you're coaching? Beautiful. You're coaching?
I coach. It's basketball. I have 2 games tomorrow.
Okay.
So I coach my minors, which are my 9 and 10-year-olds. And then I coach majors, which are 11 and 12-year-olds out in the Valley. And we got a good team, man. We work. We have a model,
mm-hmm.
right? We have a team, like, saying.
What is it?
If they don't score, and then the team says they don't win.
Oh, so you practice defense.
The first thing we learn, especially at that age, is defense.
Okay.
Because defense is all effort.
Mm.
Defense is all effort. You don't have to be the most athletic. You don't have to be the tallest, the fastest. It's just effort.
Right.
When you get kids at that age, you get different levels of athletic ability. You get different levels of offensive output,
mm-hmm.
of basketball IQ.
Mm-hmm.
So I focus on the defense because you can win games 15-4.
Yeah, well, that pretty right? much does
so
it. Yeah.
You have to give kids who may feel it be intimidated about the offensive aspects of games. Like, you got to dribble, you got to get past the defender, you got to pull up, you can't travel, you got to shoot a jumper. All of these things may be a little daunting for some kids who haven't had as much exposure and practice in basketball. But you can say, hey, this is your area. Anybody in this area, you can't let them get past you.
How hard is that to do, though, to focus and to preach defense to these kids who see the Steph Currys of the world, the LeBron James, they want to go out there and they want to score the basket because that's where the glory comes.
Yeah, the glory comes from that. But I said the biggest glory is winning.
Mm.
So if you want to win, then you can't allow them to score more than you. Mm. Right? So we'll have one or two, sometimes three kids who can really go.
Okay.
Like, they can go. They can break down the defense. They can hit the open man. They can do some special things. But as a whole, we have to be a defensive-minded team. Because if we put that press on you.
Mm. So you're like Nolan Richardson.
Hey, man, we going after you.
Okay, all right.
So we generate easy offense because we get turnovers. We don't let you cross half court.
Wow.
So we get turnovers, and that's easy layups. That's first thing. The first shot a kid learns is a layup.
Y'all frustrating the hell out of little kids now. But the little kids on the other team, they frustrating them. No, I can't get a pass half court.
But
I hate them.
The thing I've learned, and parents have had, they've tried to Richard Pryor toy me.
What's that mean?
Right? Mm-hmm. So you remember that?
Yeah, I remember the toy.
The toy, yep, right? Uh-huh. Where they hired. The man hired Richard
to be his toy
to come
a grown man
be with the kids mm-hmm. at home.
Yeah,
and so they would come up to me and be like, "Hey, oh my God, we love you." He doesn't listen to anybody but you. Can you come? No, I'm not coming to your house. I have kids. My kids are right here. I'm not coming to your house. I'm not coming to your house to be with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the respect that you have to give when you're part of a team. I always tell the kids, look, I'm teaching you basketball, but these are life lessons.
I love it.
Through the lens of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
If you give effort, if you work and you work within a team, not only here but anywhere in life, you'll be successful.
That's a great lesson to have right there and to give them to – show them at an early age because
yeah.
they gotta grow up that way. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, obviously we talk about sports because we did, you know, we do the sports, but we talk about life.
Even baby.
When we was on our radio show doing, I think we talked more about things outside
that's
of radio.
Probably why they took it away
from this is sports. we'll talk about it, but I think sometimes like life. Parallels sports,
yeah.
Like you just mentioned,
of course.
Like, you know, your life lessons, you can learn so many life lessons from the game of sports. And one of the things that I like about you is that we talk about the running back situation. Sometimes you got to be, you know, you got to be able to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be, and you've been able to adapt in a lot of ways, man. So after your football career was over, you went into broadcasting, mm-hmm. great as a broadcaster. And now you are a writer on a hit TV show. People don't realize Ephraim Salaam is one of the head writers over on Bel Air, which
yeah.
is on Peacock, which is going into its third season now.
Yes. It. I love it. I love being creative. And my mentor, Chris Collins, who got me into television writing, my first show was a show called The Continental, based on the hotels in the John Wick movies. Had nothing to do with sports or anything like that. But what he said to me was, you have a perspective on life that nobody in our writer's room will have. And you're always trying to find different voices, different people to fill these writer's room that have different life experiences. If everybody went to Harvard or Yale and mastered or majored in writing or theater arts, then you would get the same experiences. You'll get some of the same pitches. And he said, you've been able to live life that nobody in any of these writers' room will ever have lived. So you can speak to certain things through a lens that no one has viewed, and I need that.
Right.
So once I understood that, then you start looking at whatever the project is. I've been to, you know, 5-6 shows now, and you just try to add value.
That's
it's
it.
Like being in a locker room, right? You go to a team, you immediately have to add value, or you will be going to another team or going to do something else.
Right.
So if you take that same mindset of being a collective, being a team with one goal, right? Win the Super Bowl, make the playoffs, win a game, and you take that into the real world, right? You got a nice team here. Everybody's wants to make a good show. So there's no ego involved.
Right.
Whatever it takes, you go into a writer's room with that same energy and you understand the material and you have, you know, great pitches. And it just lends itself to it being successful because I felt comfortable. It didn't feel like, you know, I could talk. I could tell stories all day. So just building out these characters, especially as a, you know, a beloved IP as Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and trying to recreate that. My man Morgan Cooper for Kansas City, shout out Kansas City, had the vision to redo that. And he did that, you know, sizzle reel and put it on the trailer and put it on YouTube, and the rest was history. But we connected when I met him, and we had some of the same visions of what we thought the show should be. And this is back in 2020, so this is pre-TV deal or anything. We really talked about this show and what we thought it could be. It meant so much to me in my youth. So it's been a pleasure, man, and a blessing. I enjoy it. It's very cathartic.
And it's a really good TV show. And like I said, it's going into its third season now. We just wrapped up its second season. Really good show. And best of luck. I don't want to get too far into it, but best of luck with everything that's going on with the writer's strike. Boy, you know, I know that's tough.
It's cold out here
on
these streets, man.
Yeah, it's really cold. Yeah, man, with everything that's happening out here in L.A.
It's cold out here on these streets.
Believe me, I'm insane.
You on strike with me, too?
First time I've ever been on strike. Yeah, I don't know what it means, but I'm like on strike. So thing is, man, hopefully we can get these right because they're so important to our culture and everything that goes on, and everybody watches all these TV shows, so we need those people in the rooms and the importance of that. So hopefully both sides can come to an agreement so we can get back to work very soon.
I need to get back to work. I have these kids, man.
So now that you got this time on your hands, you're just spending more time with the kids, wife. Renice, is she getting, you getting on Renice's nerves?
No, look, it's a gift and a curse, right?
Because I called you yesterday and I was like, man, you coming? You want me to come to the show?
I'll come.
Can't wait to get out the house.
He was like, hey, man, I know it's short. No, I said, what time? Y'all don't know. I've been sleeping. I was here last night. I've been in the parking lot waiting to get back to work. No, but it's been a gift and a curse because normally I would be, you know, in pre-production right now. In July, we usually start pre-production. So I'd be over at Universal and we would have been building the show out since May 22nd in the writer's room. And I would be busy. I would be unavailable to do anything. It'd be difficult for me to continue to coach my kids in the summer because of the demand on building out a new season and things like that. So this has been the gift and the curse. The gift is I get to really spend this summer with the kids, with the family. We had all our birthdays in the summer. My 11-year-old will be 12 next Friday, so happy birthday, Rashid. And, you know, our anniversary, 20 years together, 17 married, was in June. My birthday is in June. My wife's birthday is in June. My youngest son's birthday is in June.
Right.
So That's why I really need to go back to work. So anybody out there listening to this, I'm available. June has wiped out my fund. It's just completely wiped out the emergency fund. But the curse is I'm a worker. I love working.
Yes, you do.
You know, I love to create. I love to engage. And so you just got to – it's the ebbs and flows of life, man. You got to take the good with the bad.
It is. And I look at it and tell me if I'm wrong, but it's all a blessing, to be honest with you. Because the fact that you get a chance to spend this time with your family, especially your kids, and that quality time with the wife and whatnot, and I don't know how much you love your wife and you want to spend time with her. But the kids grow up really quick.
Fast.
I mean, my kids, my youngest just graduated from college.
I saw it. Congratulations,
Thank
man.
You very much, man. She just graduated from UCLA, already on her own, working. And when she comes back home, it's like a blessing. It's like a chance to see her.
Yo, what y'all want to do? And they
enjoy this time while you can, man.
I'm trying
because
to hold on
really
to it,
busy.
Man. You know, my oldest, he don't even want me to kiss him no more. He don't
drop
me.
Do you stop kissing a boy? Now, you can kiss him either. I think you're
My dad wanted to kiss me right now. I'll kiss my dad. It's my dad, man. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, that's love. See, what we have to do is we have to start putting rules and parameters on love.
Mm.
Right? Oh, well, you got, in a certain age, you got to stop. No, man, these are my babies.
Mm.
These are my babies. Yeah. I told him, he was like, Dad, I'm not a baby anymore. I said, baby, you're going to always be my baby. Yeah. I don't care how old you are, you're going to always be my baby.
That's all.
Right?
That's
awesome. A father. I'm raising men.
Yeah.
My wife and I, we're raising black men.
Right.
Right? And so we want to raise them with love, empathy, respect, right? Knowledge of self.
Mm-hmm.
So they can be fathers and do the same thing. Eventually, us in our community, we got to break the cycle.
And I'm glad you're doing that because we need to do more of that, like you said,
not just in our community,
but over around the world, man, that men can show that type of emotions with one another and still be real men.
It's like, I love you.
I got love you. You want to hug me?
We hugged. We hugged. Chest to chest hug.
Too. I mean, we didn't give that like brother hug.
We embraced, man.
I ain't kissing you, though. But you know what I'm saying? I love you, but you know what I'm saying? Back with more E! From Salaam. Coming up, we'll talk more about the NFL. I want to talk to you about the running back situation in the NFL as well. Yeah. It's coming up next right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
If you're like me and you're on the run, you need help finding good food and eating right. And now that we're in the thick of summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support sunny, active days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track reaching your goals. If you're too busy with summer plans to cook but want to make sure you're eating well, with Factor, skip the extra trip to the grocery store and the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Then get back outside and soak up the warm weather. This July, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/Eisen50 and use code Eisen50 to get 50% off. That's code Eisen50 at factormeals.com/Eisen50 to get 50% off.
Are you currently enjoying this show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep, going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
What's great, man, are these, you know, we do a lot of NFL, NBA shows on Family Feud for Celebrity.
Right.
It's great, man, when regular people discover that celebrities don't know nothing. They don't. You think because a person is famous, they know more. They actually know less.
Yeah.
They know less than anybody else because they're exposed to less. Rich people don't know how much milk costs. You get out of touch, man. And when they come on Celebrity Family Feud, you find out how out of touch they are. They don't know anything, man. Like, one of the questions for the NFL team was, and we were asking a guy running back for the Packers, can't think of his name, but the question was, complete the sentence, strip, and you spoke, you know, like strip mall,
strip
poker.
Strip sack.
Could be even strip sack. Yeah. I said, name, complete the word strip. He said, purr. Strip purr. I went, hold on, man. I quit breathing. How is that your point of reference to complete the word strip? Purr. P-E-R. That was it. I was done. That was one of my great moments.
And again, you just walk away and you realize it in the moment, like, okay, this is it, and I'm going to let this thing go.
Hey, after the show, he asked me, he said, Steve, is there any way we could edit that out? I said, sir, we're not editing that out. Matter of fact, we're going to embellish it. You're going to say purr so loud. Purr.
You guys have had some incredible moments on this show, man.
It's funny.
Oh, man. Once again, we're back on the radio side. On the television side, they play these archives, and they was talking about Steve Harvey was on the show and talking about Family Feud, and he's talking. He said, complete the sentence, strip, just for the radio people. And he was NFL players were on there, and one of the players completed the sentence instead of saying strip mall, strip tease, he said stripper.
Per.
Yeah, that's your brethren right there, Ephraim Simone.
Hey man, look,
that's
I understood that. I mean, that didn't seem weird to me. I'm like, that makes sense. I mean, look, we were all young and. You know, you're into whatever you're into.
Yeah, okay? I mean, but you know, in the day, we surveyed 100. Who were the 100 people?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. People at the mall.
They were in Atlanta.
I can tell you that. That's the first thing they say, stripper.
That would have been the number one answer.
Yeah, exactly. So, 60 points.
They say it's all about where you are and where you're polling these people.
Exactly. That's why I'm always saying, we asked 100 people, blah, blah, blah.
In
where you asking
South
from?
Dakota.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
you ain't asking where I'm from.
No.
We don't know nothing about that. Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show on Radio Network. I'm sitting in the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. Hanging out with my man, one of my best friends in the world, Ephraim Salam. My mom is going to be so happy that you're on the show.
I love mom.
My mom just loves. She's like, oh, tell Ephraim I say hello. Oh, she just loves her some me. I think she wishes you were her son.
Well, I mean, it happens. It happens. I'm just being me, man.
You're just a great guy, man. You was giving us some marital advice during the break and how much your wife should be your best friend and all that. And no matter what you see, if you can see a stripper hanging out, you still got to go home to your wife. I mean, like,
well, I used to tell the younger guys in the locker room this. So every Thursday, I might be spilling the beans, but every Thursday in an NFL locker room, the teams by position go out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you either go to the strip club before you eat or after. But you going. you going to be there.
Well, first of all, the strip club got some of the best wings.
Well, I'm not going to eat
lemon pepper
at the
wings.
Strip club. I make it a rule not to eat around open butts. Okay? Like,
open wings.
Like butts and burgers. I can't. Right, like you wouldn't just be on the table naked at home eating. So why? Like I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, but you're putting your dollars in
the dollars are fine. You don't eat the dollars. I'm not about to.
No. Sanitary napkins.
But I would tell them, like, I hear them on the phone, like, oh no, we gonna eat, babe, we gonna be late, and we gonna be at the steakhouse all night. And I'm like, well, but they'll hear me. I'm like, yo, we're going to treasures first or wherever, and then we're going to go eat. And then it's like, oh, man, you told your wife you're going to the strip club? I said, yeah, fool.
Wow. Because you had one that understood.
Well, because I went to those establishments prior to getting married.
Uh-huh.
We've gone together. And so, like, I'm not going in there
I'm sorry, Ephraim. I got to do a survey here. Because, who's Brock, when you married?
Not technically, but.
Okay. You had a significant
other. Of course.
Significant. You want to be honest, right?
Absolutely.
You want to be transparent.
You have to be.
Are you telling your wifey? Or that's what we call in the community, wifey, even though she ain't your wife. Wifey.
That I probably would. I'm not a strip club guy, but I would tell her, hey, this is what we're doing.
Okay.
And she would be like, cool, have fun.
That's good. It's good to be transparent that way, I guess. You know?
You can't, if you can't tell the truth about that,
yeah,
then you're going to find yourself wanting to lie about more and more things.
Here's the problem sometimes is you can tell the truth and be very transparent mm-hmm. and be very honest, and then you're still going to get a lot of crap.
You got to know who you marry, though.
So yeah, that's true. See, that's why I'm
You got to know
so
who you marry.
That's why I'm...
You can tell the truth all you want and fall into a fight, but that's what you marry.
But I'm the one that's always been really transparent, been mm-hmm. honest. Hey, this one, I'll be at FaceTime, and hey, here's who's here, blah, 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 and doing all that type of stuff like that in the background. And like, okay, hey, get home, and then there's the drama. So it's almost like I'm damn if I do or damn if I don't. Because the reason I want to be trans.
I met some of your ex-girls, so.
Yeah, you know, you remember at my birthday party.
Man, bro.
Yeah, you remember. Woo. We ain't going to mention names. Because wow. As well, yeah.
Feels like there's a story
my
here.
My wife and I were like, what is happening here?
And we weren't even together.
We were sitting there counseling this girl, and all she could do was be like.
I wasn't even with her anymore, man. Yeah.
Wait, who's he talking to? I'm like.
That's just.
But I say that to say. I said, gentlemen, you're going to walk yourselves into an argument because we all play for the team. So you don't know who the other patrons are in these establishments. All it takes is, oh, hey, my cousin was at so-and-so and saw the guys there. And by the time you get home, that news has traveled home.
Already.
And then now you got to lie again. Like, where'd you guys go tonight? Oh, we went to Fleming's.
This is how it goes. Like, oh, so did you have a good time tonight? Did you have a good time tonight? Mm-hmm. And who was there again? That's when you know you're in trouble.
Hey,
when they ask that. So who was there again?
Look, if you for all of the newlyweds out there, people in marriages, if you can cut those little things out, like your phone. If my wife is like, hey, I'm going to run to the store real quick. I don't know where my phone is. I'll say, take my phone.
Somebody,
right?
Men would throw their phone on the ground they and would throw smash it. Out.
But I say that to say the amount of weight that you release mm-hmm. from being able to do something like that or not having to hide something. It's just, it's freeing. It's very freeing in a relationship.
It is, man. All right, let's talk a little sports here. I'm here talking to Ephraim Salaam, man, former NFL player, 13 years in the league. You missed this time of year, training camps.
No.
Training camps opening up.
No.
Nope.
I get anxiety around this time of year.
Why is that?
I hated training camp.
Well, I mean, most NFL players hated training camp, but you don't miss any parts of the game of football. Like you said, the camaraderie, being in the locker room.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. But I came into the league in like the late 90s, and training camp was actually really training camp. Like we had 6 weeks of two-a-days.
Hell.
Full practice.
Mm-hmm. In pads.
My first 4 years, we had it up in – my first 3 years, we had it up in – at Furman University. In South Carolina. And that must be where the devil went to school because that's how hot it was.
Brother, that's where you vacationed,
hey,
at least.
Hey, man, you come out of there and the third week of training camp, your head hurt from the helmet. It's 110 on the heat index. And you just it just became like, now being with the guys,
mm-hmm.
being in the locker room, knowing that everybody was feeling the same way except for the kickers and the punters, they just goofing around.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why I don't nobody
they
be messing
talking about
with
their
them.
Tea times.
They
yeah.
just goofing
yeah.
around over there kicking balls in the trash can and all of that. And it's just those long days. So it's a 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. day every day.
Yeah. You played with Jamal Anderson, right?
That's my guy, man.
Jamal Anderson,
Jam,
Dirty Bird back in the day.
Yeah.
Great running back, you know, played until he got injured, ran
yeah.
out.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we see running backs get the respect they used to get anymore? I know it's a passing league, but
yes.
they're not getting respect when it comes to getting paid. Why do you think that's the problem?
Well, the illusion of quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, those guys were so great. Like, Patrick Mahomes is so great.
Yep, Joe Burrow.
We really still waiting for Kansas City to have a dynamic running game.
That's true.
They're winning Super Bowls without it.
Mm-hmm. Clyde, it was
But those are the outliers.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't the norm. Every team doesn't have a Patrick Mahomes. So this notion of, well, we can win without a running back. No, he can win without a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady can win without a running back.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, y'all can't win without no running back.
But isn't this a league that's a copy? In any sport, it's always a copycat
league. Yeah. Yes.
So like, obviously you got to have a quarterback like Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow. Yeah, well,
two.
Yeah, but there's still a copycat league. And I'm trying to think of the last Super Bowl winner that actually had a great running back. I mean, Fournette with the Bucks, but Tom Brady was still on that team.
No, you're looking. It would be probably the Rams, Marshall Faulk.
I mean, that goes back to, what was that, 99? Yeah, that was 2000?
But this is, it became more of a passing league.
So when you talk about the argument that you need that running back.
Yeah.
And Super Bowl winning teams have not had that running back or needed that running back. Can you see, and on which I'm playing devil's advocate, can you see where NFL teams are saying, well, why are we going to overspend for running backs when other teams have won without running backs that were superstar players?
Yeah, I can see it, but it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it because only one team can win a Super Bowl. But that doesn't mean only one team has a successful year.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to, number one, I'm an offensive lineman.
Right.
So I understand.
And y'all would rather run block than pass block.
Yeah, I would rather go forward with aggression than back up and wait.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, to me, that seems simple, right? I would rather go forward. Like when we had our first 15 mapped out, and the night before the game, we would get our script, the first 15 plays, and I would look. I just like, please don't be no 7-step drop. Don't be a pass. And I'll look, and it'd be like 23, I left, 23 scat. That's it. Empty backfield, four receivers, right? Now they know it's pass. I hated starting a game with the pass play because as an offensive lineman, we want to set the tempo.
Right.
Like, I want to be the aggressor.
The aggressor.
I want to go after them and not let them go after me. So in terms of having a running back and a running game, I know how important it is for time of possession to be able to grind out those yards.
Mm.
To not feel like on second and six, you have to pass the ball. I want to give us an opportunity to get 4 yards a carry. After 3 carries... That's 12 yards. That's the first down, right? The longer we have the ball, when I was in Houston, the first time the Houston Texans ever beat the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning, we won the time of possession by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
It was third. The game plan was, it's going to be 3rd and 9. We're going to run the ball.
On 3rd and 9.
It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. We were running the ball.
As long as Peyton didn't have the ball, he couldn't beat you.
As long as he stood on the sideline, we had an opportunity to win the game. Ron Dane, I believe, had 153 yards rushing that game.
Ron Dane. Yeah.
But that, to me, that's a formula that I can win.
Mm-hmm.
because now you get chunk plays off play action. But you cannot play action without running the ball first.
That's true. That's true. Talking to Ephraim Salam, talking about the NFL, I want to go around the league real quick. Obviously, the Commanders just got sold $6.05 billion. So Daniel Snyder, no longer the owner officially of the team. You ever play for an owner that was just horrible, that was terrible, or just someone that you just felt like, why is he in charge of this team?
No, not in that aspect. I've played for an organization where I didn't think ownership and management were clear about how to be successful.
What do you mean?
It didn't feel like I was on an NFL team.
Cheap? What?
It was just the way things were done.
What do you mean? So explain.
So in 2009, right at the end of my career, I went to Detroit for a year. And this was after they went 0-16. And that was my 11th year. No, that was my 12th year in the league. And so I had experienced what the NFL was. The highs, the lows, the greatness of being a professional athlete in a city, in a town. And when I got to Detroit, it was like just going to work. So it was, things were being done that didn't lend to winning football games. So the guys there, the Jeff Backuses and Dominic Raiola, these guys who have been in Detroit their whole career, they never experienced what the true greatness of the NFL was. They literally were just going to work.
Because that was part of the culture.
Home.
Right.
You didn't become a professional athlete just to go to work. It comes with certain things. The city, like when I was in Denver, I'd never paid for a meal. I'd never paid for a meal anywhere.
Just because they love the franchise that much.
Never. So when you get to a place and certain things are happening and you're looking and you've had an experience in the league, you're looking around like, oh, wow, this is terrible. And, you know, I don't want to be disparaging.
And they're not winning.
No, and they're not winning.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, huh. Like, you can sacrifice certain things to win. But if you don't get those things and you don't win, then you're really just punching the clock. You're punching it with a hell of a time card, but it just didn't lend to the excitement of what the league had to offer.
We were talking about the first segment of the day with Brockman and everybody was trying to figure out the worst owners in franchise sports history. One person that we did not bring up was Bengals owner,
Mike Brown.
Yeah.
I mean they just started recently winning, right, with Joe Burrow as the quarterback, but – notoriously cheap, right?
Yes.
Heard so many stories about the hard part about hearing some players, and I know you guys are NFL players, professional players, and a lot of people in the real world don't want to, oh, you guys get millions of dollars. I can't believe. Sometimes if they don't give you proper equipment, they don't give you fresh socks or, you know, things like that. Some of the essential basics, it can lead to a terrible culture.
Oh, is a terrible culture. Yeah. It becomes, dog eat dog. One owner, I saw that segment. One owner you didn't mention. What's the lady's name who owned the
Marshot?
Marshot.
Yeah.
Good one.
A lot of racist owners.
That probably would be up at the top of my list because she was just in the media saying the stuff.
She was just crazy.
Right?
she was on. Yeah.
What was the report that came out? The Cardinals were charged for their food and lunch and at the facility, things like that.
Yeah, that to me is. That is crazy.
Yeah, remember who was it? Eric Davis? Was it in the World Series? Eric Davis got hurt. It was in the playoffs, and I can't remember what it was. They didn't pay for him to come back home, or he was on the road. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, it's been some. It's been some really terrible owners, and you got to realize most owners. This is like a game. It's like Monopoly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Most owners have made their money elsewhere, and they want to come do this thing. Like, hey, I'm going to come buy this
team.
This
is their hobby.
This is your hobby. This is what you're going to do. And it's like playing a board game at home.
But it's a damn good investment.
It's
I mean, if I give you $800 million
now,
and I make $6.05 billion,
there, yeah.
If Donald Sterling bought the Clippers for $12 million.
Yeah.
And he made $2 billion.
And he ran them like they were.
And they ran him out the league, yeah, and he still sold it for $2 billion.
Yeah, and that was like, the Clippers weren't worth $2 billion at the time.
But, yeah.
That was, you know, it was what it was. It was some friendship there, and Ballmer came in and overpaid, which is, it is what it is. What it did was it raised the value of every, if the Clippers cost $2 billion, what the Lakers cost?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? Think about that. If the Clippers, you paid $2 billion at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay $2 billion for the Los Angeles Clippers, the Lakers must have been worth $10
billion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I get it. He, in turn, raised the value of NFL franchises. I mean, of NBA franchises across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to what this group just did right now with the Commanders at $6 billion. So now, at $6 billion, what are the Cowboys worth?
I think they said the Cowboys and the Yankees are going back and forth. This the
They're valued at eight and change,
right?
But so, I bet if Jerry sold, he could probably get ten.
He could definitely get ten because somebody's going to
be a bidding war.
Yep.
You would think if the Lakers, the Yankees, or the Cowboys ever went up for sale,
jeez,
I mean, what they're worth is one thing.
Yeah.
But they're going to be, who wouldn't want, if you can afford that, who wouldn't want to own one
that's
of those
legacy.
Franchises? That's legacy. It's incredible. With Ephraim Salon, I want to end the show. I think you had a segment, Brockman, about best and worst alternate uniforms.
Oh, yeah, we got some jersey stuff. Let's take a break and come back and do that.
Okay, we're going to take a break because Brockman's a producer. He's one of the producers on the show. So when they say take a break,
he has a producer voice.
So we're going to take a break. That's what we're going to do right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
We had Jerry on the show just a couple of weeks ago, Larry, and I asked him how come Steinbrenner himself never appeared on Seinfeld. And he said Steinbrenner shot a scene, but it was so bad you cut it. Is that a true story?
True story, yeah.
What was so bad about it?
He flew out on his private jet to do the show, mm-hmm. and flew back that day. And okay, he did it. And then I go into editing and I'm watching the show. And oh my God, he was so awful. He was so bad. It was, you couldn't use it. It was much better from behind with my voice, you know, than actually seeing the real guy doing it.
Right. So that was a scene where he was with Costanza?
He was with Elaine in a restaurant, I think.
Okay.
And I had to call him up and tell him he was cut.
How did that go?
I called Yankee Stadium. I said, I want to talk to Mr. Steinbrenner. It's Larry David. He got on the phone. Yeah. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, it's Larry David calling from the Seinfeld show. Yes, yes, Larry, what is it? I said, I'm sorry to tell you this. He said, come on, you can tell me. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
Yeah. But you slipped right back in that voice.
Yeah, like right. I slipped right back in, right. And I said, I've been cut from the show. And I said, it's not your fault, but it's just the scene wasn't working, and that was it.
How did he take it?
He was a big boy. He took it well.
So he told you how he was going to take it, and he actually took it,
yeah.
George Steinbrenner and Elaine. Wow. I would never have guessed. I would have thought that there would have to have been a Costanza-George moment.
I know there was an Elaine scene. I don't know. There may have been a George scene. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show, Mike Hill filling in for Rich Eisen today, hanging out with my man Ephraim Salam. The fellas are in here. You know, one observation I made, and I've been doing this show, this is my second time doing it in the last couple of weeks. TJ, I didn't realize he burns a candle over there. The ambiance, the whole vibe, bro.
It's real deep over there.
That's how Rich starts every show when he gets to me. He's like, is the candle lit?
Is the candle lit? Okay, man.
So I'm working on my own candle.
I got a feeling that you light other things on the weekend.
What am I talking about?
I just get there. I don't know.
I mean, why wait for the weekend?
Fired up. I'm just saying, it's legal.
It's a green room for a reason.
You know, the best part the outside when we went to break, a Laker fan and a Celtic fan having a discussion. The most hilarious, intense thing you will hear. And like, Ephraim's telling.
I made a statement. I said, the Celtics are done. They'll never have a team as good as they've had for the last 2 years. That's all I said. And you went crazy.
When you say done, like they're not going to make the playoffs? Or
no,
they're not
of course
be
they'll make the playoffs.
They're not going to be contenders? What did you say?
Why would they make the playoffs? Because the East is what?
Well, the East is not as strong top to bottom as
you're
the
right.
West.
You're absolutely right. Mm. But given that, with the team that they've had, they still haven't been able to win a championship.
They were up 2-1 in the finals, and they pushed Eastern Finals to Game 7. I think a lot of fan bases would sign for that.
They would love that.
For their favorite team.
The Lakers aren't like that because we only go into the season for championships, not to make deep playoff runs. That's the difference between Boston and L.A.
Oh, I ain't going to get
started. The difference between what now?
Boston and L.A.
The team with the most career titles?
No, not the most.
Y'all tied.
Yes.
We're tied.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah, what about the five from Minneapolis?
Tied. We're tied.
Yeah, those don't count.
They do count.
You're not going to count Minneapolis.
They do count.
You and O'Shea can count those five. They don't count.
They do count.
And then you got the asterisks on the one a couple years ago.
Oh, the asterisks.
No, 17-17.
He said the bucket didn't exist.
I don't know what world you live in, but it's purple and gold, and it's not like the rest of us.
You take Bird, I'll take Magic.
We got 27,
right? You
Mike.
Take Paul Pierce, yeah. I'll take Kobe.
Yeah, yeah. And so we got...
Right? That's just how...
It's fine.
You take... I take Kareem, you take...
Bill Russell.
Bill Russell. Mm.
I mean, hey, both great franchises.
Yeah.
Both great franchises.
Course, right.
Yankees got 27, by the way,
man.
Though, Mike.
Yeah,
27.
We don't even talk in
the 27. Even though we haven't won in almost 15 years. That's 27. So the fact that we haven't won in 15 years still got 27, that says something. I'm just saying. You know, I got seven in my lifetime.
I'll admit it as a Boston fan.
I got 11 in my lifetime, so I'm happy with that.
11 what?
Championships.
Overall,
yeah.
Oh no, I'm not talking. I'm talking about just my baseball team.
I got
four
saying.
For my football team. 11. I got two for my basketball team. I'm that old that I had two championships from the Knicks.
I am that old.
I was born the year they won that first championship.
Do you count that one?
I can't remember it. I don't remember it. I know the archives. The footage is so grainy, man. It's just crazy.
When you go to the Garden, you see the Reed banner hanging.
On the Rangers. I count the Rangers as a team, 94. I was, you know, so okay. Yeah.
I got to see 11 and just all in basketball, so I'm happy about that.
11 all in. Dang. You seen 11 Lakers?
Yeah, yeah.
Have the Lakers won that many championships?
The Los Angeles Lakers.
And TJ got so many teams, I'm pretty sure his team is
like. Man, you guys with this so many teams nonsense is ridiculous.
How is it ridiculous? Like, everybody talked about how many teams TJ has.
But let's be real and look at this. Now, I'm counting, as my argument being, there's 150-plus college teams, right? I didn't go to a D1 school, so because I grew up in the middle of Pennsylvania, so I like Penn State and Pitt. It's like, so what? And by the way, again, I'm not one of these guys who like locks himself in a room on Sunday. Like, college football I love, but I'm like past that point where I'm going to sit there and let a bunch of kids who can't legally drink like ruin my weekend. So I don't like college football's great. I like it. But I like these teams. But if I got a party to go to, I'm not going to miss it so I could sit home and watch Pitt play. I'm like, cool. If they win, great. If they don't win, great. Life's going to keep on.
He's got the Mets and the Cowboys.
He sounds like he said this a couple of times.
Again, guys. Let me explain this again.
He sounds like he just going to write it down and just read it off.
It's like I got to keep explaining myself.
I'm sorry. I'm never going to mess with you again when it comes to your multiple teams, man. That's okay.
I like one football team, and that's primarily why we're in the building, so we'll just... You know, we'll concentrate on that team.
What's your team?
Well, the Cowboys.
The Cowboys, of course. Oh. Yeah. 2 minutes left in the show. We don't have time for that. Do we have time for that?
You want to do it? Let's do it quick. So the NFL, some teams have been rolling out the throwbacks that are coming back this season. Some cool, fun uniforms. we just want to take a look at some stills, get your guys' opinion on what you think. Oh. I think these Seahawks ones.
That's Steve Largent, baby. So I think about that. Ooh,
that's kind of dope.
Jim Zorn, baby.
That's good. I like that.
That's dope.
That's my era, so yeah.
Yeah.
I like some, that.
That fluorescent green and stuff they be wearing now. I was like, I don't know what
that
they
is,
are.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
This is Cleveland going with the white. White on white.
That's clean that right there.
That's real clean. Yeah.
That'll almost make you watch them.
I love that helmet.
Yeah, is that a throwback to
the Colts?
That looks like
to Baltimore. I don't remember the three.
Just an alternate.
That's an alternate uniform. Okay,
that looks like a Division III college team.
It does. I'm not feeling that. I like the black helmet though. The black helmet.
Yeah, it is.
Classic. Yeah, right there.
That's purple the people. Same uniform they were wearing when we beat them in the NFC Championship.
Yes,
I like that. Uniform.
Yeah. The Morton brothers, huh?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it happens.
Yeah. They hadn't missed a field goal all season long. And then the Lions, that's an alternate.
This is an alternate team.
That looks like a Greyhound bus logo right there. That doesn't look like a lion.
That lion does not look like
the lion is eaten in a while.
That lion looks like Scar, not Mufasa or Simba. So I don't know.
We got to wrap it up. I want to thank Chris Johnson, Godfrey the comedian, my man Ephraim Salon for joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Mike Hill, filling in for Rich Eisen. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks.
Collision has been struggling a little bit out of the gate with these ticket sales.
A little bit out of the gate. This was a major show announced on a major network with what everybody thought was this huge star, CM Punk. I said he was going to be the biggest financial flop in wrestling history, and I think I'm being proven right every minute of the day.
83 Weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.